listening to Radio Maria, Christian voice in your home. We're now presenting the show, Jesus the Promised Messiah of Judaism, with Roy Shulman.
Hi, this is Roy Shulman, and welcome again to Jesus the Promised Messiah of Judaism on Radio Maria, the show that celebrates the Jewish roots of the Catholic Church, or seen the other way around, that celebrates the fulfillment of the promise of Judaism in the Catholic Church and its sacraments. Well, today I have the great pleasure of having another enthusiastic Jewish entrant into the Catholic Church to join me on the show. She's got a very extraordinary story that I am sure that, as a matter of fact, I'll give her a little introduction blurb while I'm waiting for her to call in. She's written a book called God Calls Me Miriam, which I recently read, and it's a very beautiful. It's both her witness testimony, which she will be sharing with me on the air today, and also it is an account of much of her life, because once she entered the church, and I'm sure she'll talk about it, and as a matter of fact, before she entered the church, she established a relationship with Madonna House, which she can speak about far more knowledgeably than I can, but it is a movement in some sense within the Catholic Church that was started by a Russian woman who came to America, and it's a very, very beautiful form of Catholic spirituality. So her book is permeated both with her witness testimony and also with what I would presume to call the Madonna House spirituality, and in fact she lived out her life, didn't live out her life because she's still alive, but she spent most of her life since her conversion, or all of her life since her conversion, living this very intense form of Christianity. Are you there yet, Miriam?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Oh, great. So I don't have to put my foot in my mouth trying to describe your life, but I can let you do it. So I guess the first place to start is kind of, you know, who are you, who were you as a Jew, and how did you come to find Jesus?
Okay. All right. I was, I grew up outside of Detroit. I was born in Minnesota, the third generation. My grandparents were all of them immigrants from Eastern Europe. And, you know, it's kind of the usual story. They came to the U.S. They were, you know, of course, Orthodox in the old country. I think both my grandfathers joined conservative synagogues and continued to practice, but my parents much less so, much more assimilated. But they wanted to give me and my siblings a sense of being Jewish without the religious content. They wanted us, you know, in America to be Americans, but to be proud of being Jewish. It didn't work too well.
And let me just, because I have the benefit of having read your book, this was being proud of being Jewish and being Jewish without there really being a God involved in Judaism.
That's right. You know, we were sent to Sunday, they called it Sunday school, actually, for, I think I was 6 or 7, and we came home and said, why don't we light candles on the Sabbath, and why aren't we keeping kosher? And my parents pulled us out because that wasn't the way they wanted to live. But I always had a hunger in my heart for God. I read a lot. I needed a God. But I needed a God who was a father, who was active in my life. I needed more than history. I needed more than an ethnic identity, I would say. So my parents were quite open. I went to church with friends. I read. I remember once we were celebrating Yom Kippur with friends, and I got up from the dinner table to go see the nun story. they should have known that something was up. But I went to a university, to the University of Michigan, and I was in the Honors College there, which meant I could choose my courses pretty liberally. So as far as I was concerned, my major was the meaning of life, because that was the one thing I was really interested in. So I took anything I thought could give me answers. So I took psychology and sociology and anthropology, and I took a couple religion courses, contemporary theology. I never believed in starting from the beginning. But in my senior year, contemporary theology course, I read some of Bonhoeffer and Tillich and Berdyaev, and I started to find the Christian concepts started to have meaning for me in the context of my own life, and that was crucial. And then the next year, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't really want to go to graduate school. I remember saying to a friend, you know, I want to find out what the meaning of life is, and then I want to live it. And I think that's really what a vocation is. But I didn't know the word then. So I went to Boston, and I ended up working as a, social worker with the welfare department. And in those days, you didn't have to have a degree, or you could have any degree, and a clean chest x-ray, and you were ready to interfere in people's lives. But in this, we had a 3-day training course, and in it was a former Sister of St. Joseph in Boston. So we became friends, and I started going to church with her and her friends, who were ex-nuns, who were living together. And this was in the 60s in Boston, and it was a nest of social ferment at that time. And I became involved in all the issues of the time and civil rights and anti-Vietnam War movement. And from the Catholic standpoint, and again, some of things began to take on meaning for me. The idea of giving my life, of I saw people I knew being arrested, and for me that was sort of like giving your life and believing that there was power that came from that, that would come from that, that would affect the world. And in a funny way, resurrection began to take on meaning for me. Jesus took on meaning for me. I'd read the Bible. When we used to travel as a family, I used to look at the Gideon Bible in the motels that we stayed at. And so I knew a lot about Jesus. And I used to think that, okay, if there is a God and if he's love, the most loving thing, you know, when you love somebody, you want to become like them. So for him to become man was a very logical thing. And if he was God, then he could do anything he wanted. He could be born of a virgin. He could rise from the dead. That was no problem for me. But the problem was, is there a God? And there was no authority who could tell me so. I mean, the Bible, I mean, the church didn't mean anything. So anyways, I was hanging with these questions. Anyway, at one point, things started to get a little iffy in Boston. My friends were being arrested, and I was very impressionable. And if I was going to go to prison, I wanted to be sure that really I was doing what I believed in. So I thought I should probably get away and think about things. Anyway, that's when I thought about this place called Madonna House in Northern Ontario. I'd had a teacher, a Catholic teacher, who had told me about it, and I had a very vague idea of what it was. It was founded by this Russian baroness and all these young people who were so happy. Well, the young people I knew, you could not describe as happy. They were anguished or spaced out or on drugs or whatever. But it sounded attractive, and it was free. So I took a bus up and found myself in a world of kindness and gentleness, where people were not too interested in the important things I was doing, but they were interested in me. And oddly enough, it was a world, the kind of world that my friends and I in Boston were dreaming of, but we didn't know how to get there. You know, it's easy to tear down, but it's not very as easy to build. And I asked, you know, people, well, you know, where does all this come from? And they spoke about Jesus, and they spoke about forgiveness, and they spoke about the power of the Eucharist. And it made sense to me, but was there really a God? Anyway, at one point, I decided that the only way I was ever going to find out was to jump in. And that's when I took my courage in my hands and asked for baptism. Now, I should say before this, shall I just go on, Roy?
Sure. And yeah, when okay. You run out, I'm making a list of questions, but I'll be patient.
Okay. I had met when I first arrived, Catherine Doherty, this famous baroness, what they called the Bee. And Catherine knew who I was. I was waiting in the main building, and she walked in, and she threw her arms around me and said, "Miriam, my mother." And I was utterly confused. First of all, because at that point, my name was not Miriam, it was Mary Beth, and I didn't have a clue what she was talking about, her mother. Anyway, she said, "I call you Miriam because that is the Hebrew name of the mother of Jesus, and she is the mother of all Christians, and she is one of your people, and that's why I call you also my mother." Well, I thought she was a little nuts, to tell you the truth, but I stayed. And about 6 weeks, I should say Madonna House is a place, there are consecrated laymen, laywomen, and priests who are part of the permanent community. But there's also, I would say, up to 50 guests who come for between a week and a year and are just part of the community who live and work and pray together with the rest of the community. Well, about 6 weeks into my stay, I said to Catherine that I would like to get rid of my apartment in Boston and come back and stay longer. And she looked at me and she said, "I think it would be better if you left and went and found out what it means to be Jewish." Because at that point, Judaism really didn't have much to do with my identity. And I said to her, "I think it's too late." I don't know why I said that, actually. And she looked at me. She had those piercing blue gaze, and she said, "I see you've met Jesus Christ." Well, I didn't know if that was I'd really met Jesus Christ, but there was something about her I trusted. And the interesting thing about Catherine is she was Russian, and Russians are notoriously anti-Semitic, but her family was quite different. Her father had been a disciple of the Russian religious philosopher Vladimir Solovyov, and who was had been fired from Moscow University for his defense of the Jews. And her father had always taught her that Jesus was a Jew, and so the Christians always had to care for the Jews and protect them. And this is what Catherine lived out. So that's how I came to Madonna House, and that's how I decided finally to ask to be baptized. Hello?
Yes, I'm here. I have plenty of questions. One is, when you started, when you were talking about your childhood, mm-hmm. you talked about a kind of wanting there to be a God.
Mm-hmm.
What I was wondering was, and then you also talked about, you know, looking at the Gideon Bibles in motel rooms or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
What I can't help wondering is, in your heart, did you know there was a God? In other words, did you Did you have a sense that God existed?
You know, I think we all have a, you know, it's planted in us somehow. But I didn't know that I knew, if that makes us, if that makes any sense. You know, looking back over my life, I know the presence of the Holy Spirit. I know there were certain times that I was definitely guided by the Spirit. I also know, you know, now that you ask, I used to go into churches just to stop in wherever I was. And I would go into Catholic churches and feel very much at home. I would go into Protestant churches, and I never felt the same way. And it was only afterwards that I realized that it was, you know, the Blessed Sacrament wasn't there. I didn't even understand this attraction that I had to going into churches.
That's why, that's actually kind of why I said what I said, because it sounds to me like you had a sense of the presence of God. You may not have been able to identify that that's what it was,
yeah.
But
yeah.
There was something that was actually responding to his existence and his presence.
For sure. You know, God was looking for me long before I was looking for him, I think.
That's the business he's in.
That's
the business he's in.
Yeah.
Is you know, calling, you know, gathering in lost sheep.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the feeling in a Catholic church.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about the feeling in the Catholic churches and the feeling in Protestant churches. Presumably, you accompanied your parents occasionally to synagogue. There were probably 2 or 3 day Jews, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
What did synagogue feel like?
When
what did Jewish
kids,
worship?
We would go to the children's services for Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah, and then we always celebrated Hanukkah and Pesach at home. So you know, I had that. It was there in me. I didn't identify as a Jew as I got older, but what I discovered especially when I went to Madonna House, was that it was there inside. And you know, I had this amazing kind of experience. I was at Madonna House, and one night we went up for evening prayers. It's upstairs chapel, and somebody handed me a rosary and said, "We're going to pray the rosary tonight." And I had this visceral reaction. It was way too Catholic. I mean, my experience in Boston had been in very liberal, leftist fringe of it. Madonna House was not like that. But I thought, oh, Lord, if you are there, you have to do something, because I think I'm going to be sick. But I knelt down, and they started to pray, and each decade was in a different language. The first one was French, and the second one was Catherine prayed in Russian. And then one of the priests who was there started to pray in Hebrew. And it was as if this was a direct answer from Our Lady. It was like she was praying in my language. Now, I didn't know Hebrew, but the sounds of it were part of my being, you know, from our, you know, Passover Seders, of my dad stumbling through his, you know, bar mitzvah Hebrew. I realized that's who I was. And it was as if Our Lady was speaking to me, who I was, directly who I was. It was, I've never forgotten that.
Let me move backwards a little bit, because, again, one of the things, you know, people sometimes ask me, you know, how should I evangelize my Jewish friends or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read your witness testimony, let me give a plug for your book, because if I remember correctly, mm-hmm. it's still available from Amazon.
Or Madonna House Publications.
Or yes, of course, or Madonna House Publications. The website is www.madonnahouse.org. And the book is called God Calls Me Miriam. And anyway, I remember from it that basically, without without it really being consciously evangelization, in your growing up, in your adolescence, there were some Catholics whose paths crossed your life who did not overtly evangelize you, but mm-hmm. there was something about their presence, something about their love, something about their silent faith that yeah. rang true with you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, it was particularly this high school teacher, Connie Young, who is one of these women who whose vocation was to be a teacher. She taught people, not subjects. And after I had graduated from high school, I continued to go visit her. And I would go come home from university, and each time I would have, you know, my latest philosophy of life. Connie never, ever criticized it or said any. Somehow she listened to me until I dropped whatever identity I'd adopted and somehow found the movement of my own heart, and she affirmed that. That was so important to me. You know, and she had taught in a high school that was 90% Jewish. She had to be very careful, in fact, not to evangelize. But again, it was her, there was a witness. And I remember when I found out she was Catholic, I couldn't believe it because she was so intelligent. It didn't fit my stereotypes at all. But that was certainly probably the greatest influence at the time.
And you had a unexpectedly sympathetic interaction with a priest when you were still Jewish, right?
Yes. Father Ed Farrell, who is a well-known spiritual writer, he wrote a book called Prayer is a Hunger that was quite popular. He was he taught in the seminary in Detroit and was a friend of Connie Young's. And I went to see him. It was actually after my brother died. He died at 14. I was, 21, 22 at the time. Little younger, and I was, I was devastated. And I went to see him, and he said Mass for my brother. And I didn't, I didn't understand much. I didn't know what was going on, but during that Mass, he raised the host, and it was like light came in through the stained-glassed windows of the chapel, the seminary, right onto the host. And I thought, this is the center of the universe right here. And it just was in my heart, again, not through my mind at all. But it was another one of those stepping stones that to faith. And you know, it's God does speak to our hearts, and you know it's Him. You know it's true. That's kind of been my experience all along. I've gotten messed up when I stay too much in my head, but that's how eventually I knew the answer to whether God existed. He'd spoken to me throughout my whole life, just about.
And it was just waking up to that fact that was the confirmation.
That's right. That's right. The problems then came, of course. Catherine wanted me to know what it was to be Jewish. And after my baptism, I started to read more. But for Catherine and for most Christians, you know, salvation is on a continuum from the Old Testament through the New. But for a Jew, there's a rupture there. You know, the rupture is precisely with Jesus, and then you're left with another 2,000 years of very rich, meaningful Jewish life that doesn't fit into the Christian theological perspective. And so I knew that if I, quote-unquote, became Jewish, that somehow I was going to have to face that, and that I didn't know who was going to be able to help me there.
And let me be a little bit, not exactly contentious, but, you know, just My inclination is to see it the other way around, and that to say that that the Judaism of the last 2,000 years is not being Jewish. Being a follower of Jesus is being Jewish. Jesus was the Jewish Messiah. The tragedy is that after Jesus came and was crucified, and then shortly thereafter, Jerusalem was destroyed, the temple was destroyed, there could be no Old Testament Judaism anymore, which required animal sacrifice. And
that's
the covenant
right.
with God was changed. God always said, that the day is coming when, you know, I'll take the law which was written on tablets of stone and write it on your hearts and so forth. The intention was always to transform Judaism into a much more intimate relationship with God through the coming of the Messiah. The Jews who didn't recognize Jesus were kind of left behind. Then they lost any ability to even follow the form of Old Testament Judaism because the temple was destroyed and there was no animal sacrifice. They had to reinvent a Judaism without animal sacrifice and without the temple. And that's the Judaism that we've had for the last 2,000 years. So I would say one could really argue that that's actually not the true Judaism. It is the Jewish identity because, by definition, Jews who think of themselves as Jewish are following that, excuse me for saying this, man-made invented religion that was invented in the aftermath of the coming of the Messiah.
Well, actually, didn't that start during the Babylonian exile when they didn't have access to the temple or to sacrifices, and that's when the synagogue really came into synagogue worship came into being.
But when they regained Jerusalem and the temple,
they
reestablished animal sacrifice. They could establish ritual purity. They could do what God had asked them to do in the Old Testament. So that was just a hiatus, and it was also only, can I say 70 years, the Babylonian exile? It was something like that. When they were, first, when Jerusalem was destroyed, they were holding out hope for regaining it. But then, about the Bar Kokhba revolt, about 135 AD, this second Jewish revolt, they gave up any hope of reestablishing animal sacrifice. They had a the Council of Javnia, it's referred to. They got together, the leading rabbis, and said, essentially, oy vey, what do we do now? And they came up with what since then has been referred to as rabbinic Judaism, a substitute for temple Judaism. And that's what Judaism is today. So when Catherine said it's too late, or when you said it's too late for me to discover my Judaism, and she said, because you met Jesus Christ, it's like, no, it's not too late. Because you met Jesus Christ is why it's possible for you to discover Judaism.
That certainly was true for me in that sense. I think, I always had a sense, Roy, of the authenticity of Jewish worship, just of hearts that are open to God, of people whose identity is rooted in this, in God's choice, in God's election. And, I could never, the meaning, the survival of Judaism after the destruction of the temple, or really after the death and resurrection of Jesus, is something that I could never really intellectually come to terms with. And I finally decided, or not decided, it seemed clear to me that it's like this was actually the cross. That, you don't understand the cross. It is. But it was something that I simply had to live with in my being and offer to God. I don't know if that makes sense. It's a little hard for me to put it into words. But it's part of the mystery. I mean, why didn't Jews accept Christ? Well, I mean, we can say, you know, why don't we all accept Christ? Why don't we live as if we accept Christ? But there's something in there that's a mystery, and I think St. Paul recognized that at some level, too. You know, and it, somehow once I realized that, I just realized I had to carry that in my being, and I wanted to, and not try to work it out in my head. It's too big, and it leads us into too much trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, we could certainly see that.
I think I agree perfectly with what you're saying, but is part, and I've never thought of it in these terms, but is part of what you're saying that the Jews' failure in part to recognize Christ isn't in itself part of a cross that's been laid on the shoulders of the Jewish people? It's part of their particular cross.
Well, I'd be very careful with that myself. You know, again, it's I have too much of a respect for Judaism and for, again, there's of the authenticity that's there, that I've never wanted to say, okay, you know, you don't see the whole picture, you don't, if you only knew what it really was. You can make a case for that, you know, and certainly like Messianic Judaism is an example. But I don't know, there's a mystery there. There's a mystery, and I don't want to try to touch it too much. What I have had to do is to work out in my own life what it means to be a Jew and a Christian, and how I can continue to belong to those people and know that Jesus is the fulfillment of God's plan. Different people, you know, resolve it in different ways. I've never been able to, I can't live, two calendars, put it that way, or two identities. But I have had God has answered those questions for me. One of my biggest questions was, you know, Judaism is you live it as a people, as a community. And how do you do it if you're separated from the community, from the church? And we opened a house in France in 1981. And at that time, the Cardinal Archbishop of Paris was Jean-Marie Lustiger, who was a baptized Jew, who continued to claim his Judaism openly. And we met him, which was quite an event for me, and we were invited to a private mass at his residence. And I had never I didn't have a chance really to talk to him privately. But again, during that mass, at the moment of consecration, it came to me that in the Eucharist is the communion, is absolute communion of all with the Jewish people, the Christians. We're one in the body of Christ. We're one body. And for me, that was the answer to this question. To whom do I belong? how am I, can I be one with the, my Jewish people being baptized and believing in Jesus? So that was quite, it was a very, very powerful moment.
When I look at my life before my conversion and my hunger for God and my frustration at not really being able to get any straight answers about God or what he wants or any real, you know, one-to-one kind of relationship to God. And then I now know what I have through, you know, having become Catholic and through mm-hmm. both the teaching and also the sacraments and the consolation of the sacraments, the experience mm-hmm. of God, you know, and I feel more Jewish than ever, but my heart mm-hmm. goes out. I mean, I frankly feel tremendous, what feels like compassion or sorrow for Jews who are hungering for God and mm-hmm. getting so little when there's so much to be had. And mm-hmm. So I mean, I respect it if they, you know, in other words, I respect whatever God's doing in their soul if, in fact, they don't, you know, bite at the worm on the hook, so to speak. In other words, if, mm-hmm. if preaching the gospel to them does not resonate with them, that's fine. That's between God and mm-hmm. them. But mm-hmm. I can't in good conscience not care about at least, you know, in some sense preaching the gospel, even if it's only like you're a high school teacher, but trying to kind of bring them to the fullness of, excuse me, what they brought the rest of the world when they brought the Messiah, when they brought Jesus to them.
Yeah.
Is that still consistent with what you're describing as your respect
yeah,
for the Jewish people?
Yeah, you know what, I think we all have different ways of evangelizing. You know, and I can completely understand and respect what you're saying. I've my own experience. Well, if somebody wants to know, or if there's an opening, or somebody is questioning or searching, I am for sure I'm going to share what I know to be true. With my own family, for example, it's. There's no door in that way. I simply have to live. It has to be a from a lived witness because no words are going to do anything.
Well, this is like your high school teachers, you know, your experience.
Oh, I'm sorry?
See,
my high school teacher never said a word until I started asking.
Yeah. No, this is what it sounds like you're you know, reflecting the same kind of approach.
Yeah. You know, until the door is open, until you can touch the searching and the longing in somebody's heart, in my experience, words aren't going to do too much. I mean, people don't even listen today. We've lost the ability to discuss.
Well, let me just ask something else that's close to my heart. What about the concept of praying for... praying that they come into the fullness of the relationship between God and man, which was made possible through Jesus and the sacraments.
Yeah. Well, again, maybe this is heretical. I pray that people discover God in whatever way they can. You know, God speaks to us in different ways. And I don't worry myself, I don't worry too much about the Jewish people as a whole. I pray that people find the living God and that their hearts become open to him, period. And I think God's going to do the rest. And I also believe in the power of each one of our lives, you know, which we just, this is a real Madonna House, tenet, I think, is that it's Christianity, for heaven's sakes, but it's the power of our lives given to God as deeply and completely as we can, which he is going to use, and he'll use it for the Jews, and he'll use it for the Muslims, and he'll use it for the, you know, the people in concentration camps and you know, he'll use it. But what I have to do is to give my life and to give my heart to him as completely as possible. And then I don't have to worry too much about the details.
There is something very fundamentally community-oriented around Jewish identity, that Jews mm-hmm. are a member of a Jewish community. And in fact, theologically, salvation for Jews is not an individual thing. It belongs to the community, and if you're a member of the Jewish community, you can't lose your salvation, whatever sinning you do. The only way you can lose your salvation is, in fact, by separating yourself from the Jewish community, and that's in the theology. So in response to the community impulse or the community nature of Judaism, I know, again, from your book, which I recommend, and I'll name again, God Calls Me Miriam, that's available from MadonnaHouse.org or Amazon, that you spent a lot of your silent apostolate in the former Soviet Union.
Yes.
And you're also Jewish, a part of the Jewish people. And
mm-hmm.
Do you see any relationship between you having been called to the Soviet Union and you being a Jewish follower of Jesus?
Well, I'll just tell you quickly when this one incident, when this was very graphically illustrated for me, I lived for 12 years in the city of Magadan in far northeastern Russia, where our community had a little mission, little foundation. And Magadan has the same association for Russian as Auschwitz does in the West, in that it was it's very closely associated with the Gulag. And at one point, I was fortunate, privileged to be part of a pilgrimage with members of the Russian Orthodox clergy, actually. We were three Catholics who were part of it, where we went to some of the different camps and prayed. And at one of the camps, which was notorious as a death camp, people were brought there for execution. And the Russian Orthodox bishop who was with us was incidentally very open to us, to the Catholics. He prayed. It was as if I just had this sense of souls being brought to rest of this horrible place. And I felt that my presence there as a Jew was not a coincidence, that God had brought me there from my American upbringing, from my experience in France. But he'd brought me there to pray for the Jewish souls who died in that terrible place, and to pray for their peace and their salvation. And it was a very, very powerful experience. That's just, I've met a number of Jews. I have friends there who are Jewish Christians. It's all the Russian Judaism is a whole different experience again. But that's probably another subject that we could talk about sometime.
Okay, well, we're kind of drawing to the end. I don't know if there's anything anything you want to say, any way you want to kind of lead us, so to speak. I would like to invite you to take us along a track that you want to leave us with.
Oh, gee. All I can say is that my being is, God has called me as a Jew to himself through Christ. And I just pray to be as faithful to that as I can. Ultimately, we're all, again, we're called to give our lives. And we do it through everything we do, every act. We do it in life itself, which is, again, very Jewish, I think. And I just pray that for all of us.
Well, can't do better than that. I will say that all my Catholic life I have heard about Madonna House, but I never got anywhere near the understanding of what that spirituality was all about that I got from your book and your attempt. A lot of the book is, of course, seems to be extracts from a diary that you kept for many of the years of your, I don't know what to call it, ministry. And it's really a very beautiful illustration of trying to live out the little mandate, I think is what Madonna House calls it from the foundress. And so if anyone's interested in what Madonna House is all about or what that spirituality is all about, I know there are a number of books, including books by the foundress, Catherine Doherty, but I think your book is also a contribution to that.
Thank you. Thank you so much. This has been very wonderful for me, just to be able to talk with you and to try to, you know, articulate some of these things.
Yeah.
I'm very grateful.
Well, I'm very grateful for your having come on, and very grateful for your testimony. And of course, we'll both be, let's hope, happily on the other side before I'm aware of the fruitfulness of your life and your self-sacrifice and your prayers. But I have a feeling that it'll be a very beautiful thing to see when we are on that other side.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, it will be fun. Just think, it's a not topic for another show, but when you think about the particular judgment and then the general judgment, so we can see everything woven together into the tapestry, that's going to be really neat. But anyway, I just thank you very much. Thank you for your life and your ministry and your prayer and your sacrifice and your choice of vocation and for coming on the show.
Well, thank you, Roy, and the same thing to you. I'm so glad we've had this chance.
Good. Well, so I guess what I usually do now, and I'm going to do, is I also want to thank our listeners for listening, and I hope that the show has been fruitful for you. And so thank you for listening. Thank you again, Miriam, for coming on. And everyone except Miriam, please join us again next week, same time, same place, for Jesus, the Promised Messiah of Judaism on Radio Maria. And with that, I'll say goodbye for now. See you next week.